and welcome to the sixth edition. Maybe it's seven or six, I don't know. But anyway, welcome to the latest edition of the Matt Cummins Fantasy Baseball Podcast. In this podcast, I am going to discuss the reliever slash closer position as well as starting pitchers. But before I discuss that, let's get some housekeeping out of the way. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Cummins. You can read my writing at mattcummins.com as well as Baseball Professor and Through the Fence Baseball. Now, you can find me more at Baseball Professor as I do write a daily column every Monday through Friday that recaps the previous day's events into a nice little article for you to read and consume. So you can have all the latest updates and analysis from for fantasy baseball. Okay, so this is Saturday afternoon, West Coast time. And it's about 2 o'clock. And I just finished watching the first game of the Dodgers and Diamondbacks. And basically what I took away from the game was that Clayton Kershaw looked good. He wasn't vintage Kershaw as he was last year, but he still, you know, looked really good. Yasiel Puig, I don't know, man. Like, he took, I mean, again, this is a small sample size caveat. It's only 5 at-bats, but he did not look good in any of his at-bats. And I don't know, because the Dodgers have worked with him to try to reduce some length in his swing and make him more of a patient hitter. And I don't know if that's going to take over a long period of time because he doesn't look the same as he did, you know, last year. But again, this is a 5 at-bat sample size, so it's don't really make much of it. But that's just my initial impression of the Dodgers. Wade Miley looked pretty good. He still has a problem with walks. He walked the first batter to begin an inning twice, and that led to him allowing some runs and put him in bad situations. But overall, he looked pretty good. He looked pretty much like he did last year. And again, with Wade Miley, there's not really much upside. You know, he's pretty much a number 3, number 4 starter that will give you 5 to 6 innings and keep you in the game pretty much. Now, what I will say is that with Miguel Montero, he looked pretty good. He looked like he took really good at bats and he looks pretty good. And actually, he's actually one of my sleepers this year, so he looked really good. See, Chris Owings, he has a major problem. Again, this is against Kershaw, so there's a caveat there as well, but he has a major problem against curveballs, especially curveballs down in the dirt, and he swings a lot at those, and he has to find a way to refine his approach or at least make more solid contact against breaking balls because he really struggled a lot against Kershaw's breaking balls. Because after the first or two pitches that Kershaw threw to Owings, he pretty much just threw curveballs to Owings, and he couldn't make contact or make any type of hard contact. Brian Wilson looked good. I don't know how reliable the velocity readings were that I was looking at. I was watching the Diamondbacks commentary, and I don't know how reliable the fastball or the velocities were in general. But Wilson looked good. Kenley Jansen looks really good. That cutter looks really good. I think those are all my major takeaways. So, yeah, and also with going back to Wade Miley again. So the home run that he allowed to Van Slyke, it barely got over the fence. It basically scraped the fence, and it looked like it was aided by the wind a little bit. So, you know, it's a little bit of bad luck there. Another thing I noticed is that Mark Trumbo, it's going to be an adventure for Mark Trumbo out there in left field. I think in the third inning, Van Slyke hit a ball to the warning track, and Mark Trumbo terribly misplayed it. And what happened was that Trumbo went to the fence and climbed the fence thinking that the ball was going to be a home run, but the ball, you know, hit, you know, maybe a foot or two in front of the wall, and it turned into a double. So that was a pretty bad misplay by Trumbo, and, you know, again, that's going to negatively affect pitchers because his defense probably be not very good. But he did have a really good throw to the gun. He threw out Clayton Kershaw in the third inning, where he hit a ball to left field, and Kershaw tried to turn that single into a double, and Trumbo threw a really good strike second base and got Kershaw out. But overall, Trumbo's going to be pretty bad in left field. But anyway, so those are just my initial impressions of the game that I saw. So, and another thing is that with rankings, you know, the fact, I don't know, the leagues that you're in, the way that they're going to treat the game is a little bit different. So I play primarily in NFBC drafts, and how they're approaching the drafts is that the league, the leagues don't start until the stateside opening day. So basically when you roster a player, you already know the stats of the players that are participating in today's games. So the fact that Kenley Jansen already has a save, you already get that if you start him in the first week of the league. Some other leagues like ESPN and like Yahoo, their week one started today or this morning. Yeah, but anyway, so if you're playing a league like NFBC, yeah, I think for me, like I had Kershaw ranked literally like 0.001 behind Yu Darvish in my rankings. But now, since Kershaw already has a win under his belt and looks pretty good, now he takes a step above Darvish because he already has a win banked already for the year. And the same thing goes for Jansen as well. But anyway, all right, so let's talk about individual pitchers. So the first player I wanted to talk about was Yordano Ventura of the Kansas City Royals. This is a player that I wrote up the other day at Baseball Professor saying that this is a player that I believe will end up winning the AL Rookie of the Year, which I think is a pretty bold statement considering Xander Bogaerts is going to be the shortstop for the Boston Red Sox. The reason why I believe that Ventura will be the Rookie of the Year is because he has really good stuff and he can miss bats with his stuff pretty easily. He features a mid-90s fastball, as well as a fastball that can touch over 100 miles an hour fairly easily. He also features a really good curveball, as well as it could be a plus pitch, but maybe it's not there yet because I haven't seen him yet this year, but he has a really good changeup as well. And those are both secondary pitchers that play off really well against the fastball. And the reason why I say that is because the curveball relies heavily on fastball command and playing with the fastball. If the command of the fastball isn't working, then the curveball will lose its effectiveness. Because I'm not a scout, but basically how it works is that I think it's because of the tumbling action of the curveball and how it's seen out of the hand compared to the fastball. And also the velocity difference between the fastball and the curveball is pretty huge. So if a player is gearing up for the fastball and Ventura throws a curveball, then it's going to be harder for that hitter to make solid contact against the curveball. Also, he features a changeup, which is really good against more of an effective weapon against lefty hitters and righty hitters. And also, what's really good about the changeup is that it plays off exactly with the same type of arm action of the fastball. And also, that also provides a velocity break between the fastball as well, which makes it really effective. And another thing I wanted to talk about is, now he's a small guy. He's only about 5'11", I think, and like 180 pounds, if that. And usually with pitchers of that size, they have a hard time holding their velocity deep into games. But as I wrote, you know, I showed a graph from Brooks Baseball showing that as the game wore on, the fastball velocity actually got higher, not lower, which is actually really remarkable for a pitcher of that size. And another thing I wanted to talk about was Ned Yost, the Royals manager, said the other day that there will not be an innings cap and that he could throw, Ventura that is, could throw 180 plus, you know, to 200 innings this year. And even, you know, originally I wrote that he would probably be limited to about 170 to 180, considering last year he threw 150 innings, which was the most of his career last year or to date anyway. But if he's able to throw, you know, 190, 200 innings, this is a player that will give you a really good strikeout rate as well as give you a lot of strikeouts. Now it's hard to say how reliable the NFBC ADP data is because a lot of the drafts that have taken place came under the fact that no one knew that Ventura was going to be in the Royals rotation. So it's a little hard to say. But he's currently being drafted in the, like, the 23rd round, 24th round of NFBC. You know, at that, you know, ADP, he's a steal. And I have to believe that his ADP will jump maybe, you know, at least 2 to 3 rounds if you have your draft today or tomorrow or moving forward. But this is a player that I said, that I wrote about, saying that this is a player that I believe will be a top 30 starting pitcher. And internally at Baseball Professor, there was some talk about how that could be a little bit too bold. You know, but, you know, the reason why, you know what, it is bold. And you have to have, in order to win fantasy baseball, you need to have guys that you plant your flag on. You can't just, you know, keep drafting safe pitchers. You know, you have to find guys that will outperform their ADP. And this is a player that has no problem missing bats. He has a good fastball. Now, the big question I have with Ventura is the fastball command. Now, according to the scouting reports, that still needs to take a jump forward. And it actually, again, this is before spring training. So if the command jumps up a full grade, like, this could be a monster pitcher. I am willing to take that chance this year, and I will own him in every league. And also, to prove what I'm saying is true, I did my first ever quote-unquote expert league draft. And as I actually spent $6 on him at the end of the draft. Technically, I guess I may have overspent, but not to me. One of the owners in the league, this is an auction-based league, again, sorry, 12-team mixed league, and one of the experts in the draft said that I overpaid, saying I should have, $6 is too much for him. And I was like, well, you know, I believe that this is a top 30 starting pitcher, and this is a player that I want on my team, so I will pay for him. So you heard it here. This guy will be a top 30 starting pitcher, especially if he's able to pitch 190 to 200 innings. All right, so let's talk about someone else. So the next pitcher I wanted to talk about was a player that's already been receiving a lot of talk as a sleeper among the fantasy experts. And this is a player that I pegged as a fantasy, not as a fantasy expert, but as a fantasy sleeper in my fantasy guide, which can be found at mattcummins.com/fantasy guides. And also, just remembered right now that everything that I'm talking about today can be found in my fantasy guide, and within the fantasy guide, you'll find over 450 player evaluations. So for hitters and for pitchers. And also, so a lot of the things I'm talking about today come from that fantasy guide. And if you want more information about the players that I'm discussing or about any other player in general, feel free to go there and download it for free. Okay. So anyway, the reason why I like R.A. Dickey this year is he was battling various, you know, injuries last year. She was dealing with back and neck injuries for the first half of the year, or maybe the first 4 months of the year. And this is a player that looked really good during the last 2 months of the year. The numerical representation of his struggles last year is not in the ERA or the WHIP or the, you know, batting average against or whatever. It has to do with the velocity of the knuckleball. So during his 2012 season, when he won the Cy Young, his knuckleball averaged somewhere between the 76 to 78 miles per hour. Now, during his struggles during the first 4 months of the year, his knuckleball velocity was somewhere between 74 to 75 miles per hour, which is two miles per hour less than it was in 2012. Now, when he became healthy again towards the end of the year, the last 2 months of the year, sorry, his performance took a big step forward. For example, he had a 3.35 ERA with a 1.13 WHIP. Now, if you compare that to 2012, he had a 2.73 ERA and a 1.05 WHIP. And it looks fairly similar to what he, you know, what he did in 2012. So this is a player that began the year unhealthy and he put up poor numbers. And towards the end of the year, when he was healthy again, the velocity of the knuckleball increased to the level that it was in 2012, and his performance shows that. So the thing is that with R.A. Dickey is that this is a player that kind of sneakily threw over 220 innings last year and had almost 180 strikeouts. Now, so this is a player that if you own him, he'll still provide a good amount of strikeouts. And I do believe that he's healthy again this year. And he could be a player that, you know, he may not be, he won't provide the numbers that he provided in 2012, but this is still a player that can provide a 3.4 ERA with a lot of strikeouts and a lot of innings. This is a player that will help your ratios a lot because he will throw so many innings as well. Again, this is another player that I'm drafting in every league because he has an ADP of somewhere in the 28th, 27th round, and that's way, way too low for a player like this with this amount of upside. If you're worried about him hurting his elbow or, you know, hurting his ulnar collateral in his elbow, you don't have to worry about him because he doesn't have one, and he will never, he won't have to succumb to like a Tommy John surgery. So anyway, so yeah, this is a player I will be owning, and this is a player that is another one of my flag players this year. Okay, so let's talk about someone else. So I wanted to talk about a player that I am not buying at all, and that player is Masahiro Tanaka of the Yankees. He's currently going as the 28th pitcher and 93rd overall at NFBC. And this is basically, I think that's the start of the 10th round. And he's going in front of guys like Alex Cobb, Matt Latos, Cole Hamels, Shelby Miller, Danny Salazar. And those are all pitchers that I would gladly take over Tanaka. The reason why I'm not buying Tanaka is not primarily due to his skill set. I think his skill set is pretty good, but it has more to do with the Yankees' defensive infield. And the reason why that's important is because Tanaka is a ground ball pitcher, and the Yankees' infield is going to be pretty bad, especially when Derek Jeter is out there at shortstop. Now, if Brendan Ryan was out there, it'd be a lot different, but that's not going to happen. Jeter is going to be the everyday shortstop and probably will play, you know, between 80 and 100 games at shortstop, and that's going to severely limit Tanaka's value. On top of that, you know, I have no idea what to expect from Tanaka, and I think his current ADP suggests that he has to pretty much perform as, you know, he has to pretty much meet expectations of a lot of owners to provide any type of fantasy upside or any type of positive ROI on that ADP, and that is way too high, like I said before, for Tanaka. Also, I don't believe the Yankees are going to be a good team this year, which means that the ability for him to earn wins will be a lot lower than, say, like David Price in Tampa Bay or Matt Moore, for example, in Tampa Bay. So another thing that I'm worried about with the Yankees is the bullpen. Other than David Robertson, there's not really a lot of guys that I trust. Now, there were some guys last year that had some good years, but, you know, those are more one-year samples than, you know, two- or three-year samples. And I want to see them do it again before I'm ready to declare the Yankees having a good bullpen. So, again, like I said, this guy is going way too high, and he has to pretty much, you know, meet those expectations that people have for him. Any type of fancy ROI or positive ROI. So, no, I am staying away from him. So another couple of players I wanted to talk about briefly that I do not like this year, and again, I stress this year, I do not like Ryu for the Dodgers as well as Sonny Gray of the A's. So what I don't like about Ryu is that he doesn't really have overpowering stuff, and he doesn't really have the ability to miss a lot of bats. And I think what happened last year was he benefited greatly from teams seeing him for the first time, but talk about in my guide that when, first of all, like I said before, he doesn't have overpowering stuff, and he relies on command to get strikeouts instead of having good stuff. So what happened was that he benefited very greatly from teams seeing him for the first time, but when teams saw him again or a third time, he was clearly not as effective, and his strikeout rate decreased dramatically when teams saw him again. And I think now that this year teams will have seen him, and the results that he had last year will not repeat itself. And so this is a player that I will not buy on any level unless he falls to the like 80th starting pitcher, which will not happen. With Sonny Gray, this is a player that he had really good numbers last year, but he's primarily a two-pitch pitcher. He throws the fastball and he throws a curveball. And what happened was that, you know, that's a really good combination, especially when you see it for the first time. But if you see it again it's the curveball loses its effectiveness and it's no longer a big wipeout strikeout pitch as it was last year. So for any type of, if you, you know, the easiest way I can explain it is that if you look at the Tigers hitters during the ALDS, if you look at how he looked in game two, it was either game one or game two versus game five, the hitters saw the ball a lot better and they had a lot better swings against Sonny Gray than they did the first time around. So the big thing that I wrote about in my guide is that in order for Sonny Gray to take the next step forward and to maintain his ADP, which is the 51st pitcher at NFBC, he is going to have to develop that changeup. And the changeup is going to have to be a fairly solid average pitch. Because if he's only a two-pitch pitcher, hitters can more or less guess on which pitch he's going to throw. And they can either guess fastball or curveball. And if they guess right, then the ball is going to be hit a long ways. And right now, he's having a pretty poor spring. And again, that could be due to various factors, but this is another reason why I'm not buying Sonny Gray. You know, I think he'll be good eventually, or he'll, you know, eventually maybe next year be deserving of that ADP. But this year, I'm not buying this year. Now, I do understand that Sonny Gray has a lot of things going for him. For example, he can miss bats, and he plays in a really good ballpark behind a really good defense behind him. But I don't think he's going to be able to miss bats at the same clip as he did in 2013. So now I'm going to discuss closers. So unlike other years, this is a year where there's maybe 10 or so closers that I feel fairly comfortable drafting in any league. And after that, there's a lot of question marks. So one closer that I'm not buying this year is Sergio Romo of the Giants. So far in spring training, he's not throwing his slider and his fastball velocity is way less than it was last year, which indicates to me that either there's something wrong or he may have lost a step or whatever. Also, on top of that, there's a player that the Giants have to manage pretty carefully because he is very injury prone. And, you know, the Giants limit his innings and try to make sure that he stays healthy. So if you include the health issues as well as the fact that, like I said before, his fastball velocity is down and he's not throwing his slider anymore. And maybe that's all, you know, maybe that's just him gearing up for the regular season, or maybe it's not, but this is still a closer that I'd rather not take a chance on. Like, another closer that I'm not buying this year is, unfortunately, and this is due to injury, this is Aroldis Chapman. You know, obviously he kind of sucked what happened to him when he got hit the other day. And the Reds are projecting him to be out 6 to 8 weeks, which is, I guess that's a good timetable, but I believe that he'll likely be out longer than that. And I think he'll probably be out at least 2 or 3 months. And if he's out that long, then, you know, how many saves is he going to have? 15, maybe? And another reason why I didn't have Chapman high in my rankings even before the injury was due to the fact that the Reds probably won't be very good this year. And I have if I was going to go over under on 80 wins, I would take the under, which means that I don't expect him to have a lot of opportunities either way, even if he was healthy to begin the year. Let's talk about someone else. Let me scroll down. So another closer that I'm really worried about is Koji Uehara of the Red Sox. Now, this is another player similar to Sergio Romo in the fact that the team has to manage his innings carefully or he'll break down. Now, last year he threw the most innings by far ever in his career. And I have a feeling this could be another situation where, you know, he had a really good year and, you know, the innings will add up and take effect this year. Again, this guy's going like top six, seven closer in NFBC. And there's a lot of health issues surrounding him. Now, but when he's healthy, he's really good. And if he didn't have any injury concerns, he could arguably be the top two or three closers in the game. But again, if I'm taking a closer, I want someone that's more reliable. You know, I have no problem taking a like a Greg Holland or even a Trevor Rosenthal. Now, I know Rosenthal's only done it for 1 year, but I'd rather take my odds on him over Uehara, who I already know has injury problems. Or even, I'd rather take Joe Nathan over Uehara, too. So that's another player that I am staying away from. Let's see. Another closer. Let's see here. Now, another very underrated closer that's going is Glenn Perkins. This is a player that who misses a good amount of bats and doesn't walk a lot of players, which is really good. So, and I always like that combination of players. I don't care if he's left-handed or not. You know, if you miss a lot of bats and you don't walk anyone, you're going to be successful. You know, he may not pitch on a very good team, but he'll still get a good amount of opportunities in 2014. So now another player that is going that is being underdrafted is Grant Balfour. Now, what I like about Balfour is the fact that he plays on the Rays and will have a lot of opportunities to get saves. So last year, Fernando Rodney had 48 opportunities and blew like 8 of them. So if Grant Balfour just performs as well as he did last year, or close to that, he'll have 40-plus saves under his belt. And he still pitches in a very good pitcher-friendly ballpark that will eat up fly balls. Now, the big reservation I have about Balfour is that he wasn't nearly as good as his numbers suggest. At times, towards the end of the year, he lost the velocity on his fastball, was lower, and he was dealing with maybe fatigue issues, but towards the end of the year, he wore down. So that's something that to be cognizant of. But this is still a player that, you know, like I said before, he'll have plenty of save opportunities in 2014. Another player that will have many save opportunities is Jim Johnson. What's good about Jim Johnson is that he will be the closer of the A's as long as he's healthy. Now, the biggest question I have with Jim Johnson is the fact that the infield defense for the A's isn't very good. Now, what I think is going to happen is that, you know, in the ninth inning, they'll either take out Jed Lowry or move Jed Lowry to second base and put Nick Punto at shortstop, because anyone who watches Jed Lowry play defense knows that he's not a good defender at shortstop. And since Jim Johnson is a ground ball heavy pitcher, you can't really have a poor defensive shortstop back there. And I think if the A's deploy that strategy of putting Nick Punto in the game in the ninth inning, then the A's and Jim Johnson will be successful. Another closer that I'm not really high on is Addison Reed. This is a player that lost 2 or 3 miles per hour on his fastball last year, and he threw the most sliders ever in his career last year. My hesitation with Addison Reed is Kirk Gibson, the D-backs manager, has a very short leash and will go with the hot hand at any point during the season. So if for some reason Addison Reed struggles, and I do think he will struggle because, again, the fastball velocity dip and the fact that he's throwing a lot more sliders, that he could lose his job for a month or two. Because this is the same team that employed Brad Ziegler as their closer for 2 months last year, and it's very possible that this could happen again in 2014. Another player that I will probably get in a lot of leagues is John Axford. Now, there was a really good piece written by Jason Collette at RotoWire showing why he was potentially struggling last year. So last year, after he got traded to the Cardinals staff told him that he was tipping his pitches, and that the way he held the ball in his glove during the setup clearly told the hitters what pitch was coming, and they addressed that last year. And then when he did make the adjustment of not tipping his pitches, his performance improved. So another reason why I like Axford is the fact that the Indians are fairly lenient with their closer. This is a team that, you know, had Chris Perez close for them all year despite how bad he was a lot of times. So I think, you know, John Axford will have a long leash, and I think he will get 35, you know, saves. You know, I think the Indians will regress. They won't make the playoffs this year. But again, this is a guy, I think Axford will keep the job all year, and he'll provide a lot of cheap saves for you. Okay, so that is it. I think that's all the closers I wanted to talk about. I think, you know, like the last thing is that, you know, everyone likes Nate Jones. I like Nate Jones too. So I'm not going to talk about him because odds are if you listen to any other podcast about fantasy baseball, they probably would have talked about Nate Jones in depth already. So I'm not going to, but I do like him a lot. And this is a guy that will give you a lot of cheap saves. Another thing is that with the Astros, Chad Qualls is the closer and Qualls will get 20 saves this year, 20 to 25 saves this year. So again, you can get Qualls towards the end of your drafts, and I will gladly do that in my drafts as well. All right, so that is it for this segment. Welcome back to the Matt Cummins Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Okay, so that is it. I have concluded my positional preview for every position in fantasy baseball. And again, if you're looking for more information, feel free to go to mattcummins.com/fantasyguides, and there you will find information about every player that I've discussed in every podcast, as well as lots and lots of information because it's a really big book. So, like I said earlier, this is Saturday afternoon. Well, Saturday night now. But anyway, so this is my last podcast for a while because next week I will be in Las Vegas attending an FBC. I will be doing a live auction, a 15-team mixed league, and it will be a live auction, and that will occur on Friday. So therefore, I will be out of the picture. Well, I won't be able to do anything. I won't be able to do any podcasts for a while. But I think once the season begins, I will be trying to post a podcast every Friday that will recap what I've been writing about, as well as talk about my starting pitcher rankings that will come out as well every Friday night or Saturday morning. So yeah, so right now what I'm doing is I actually have another draft. I have another NFBC draft tomorrow, which is a 12-team mixed league. And this morning I was working on my flow chart for my draft, and which is actually really cool. I've never done a flow chart before, and it's pretty cool. And that's something that I learned from the Larry Schefter book, The Winning Fantasy Baseball. And it's pretty cool. And it made me think about, you know, how to structure my draft in a different way, and I'm going to try it. And so far, from doing the flowchart, I've actually learned more doing that than doing mock drafts, which is actually way more time efficient than doing mock drafts. So I think it's pretty cool. I think I'm going to be owning a lot of players that I've talked about in the league, or not in the league, but in the podcast that I've talked about so far. So I will be owning, you know, like Jason Worth. I will be owning Melky Cabrera, R.A. Dickey, John Axford, you know, Averth Cabrera, and so forth. And I do believe that those players will help me bring a fantasy title. And also, if you listen to last week's episode, you'll notice that I had the first pick, which means I get Mike Trout, which means I will have an advantage over everyone else in the league because I will get a five-tool player or a five-category player, and that will allow me to build my team in a certain way the rest of the year, or for during the rest of the draft. So really excited about that. I've been really busy with work and doing the daily fantasy roundup at Baseball Professor, which actually is turning out to be more time consuming than I thought it would be. So it really limits my ability to write other stuff besides that. So, but yeah, so I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And again, I think I'm going to try to do this every Friday after next Friday because I won't be here. I'll be in Las Vegas. Yeah. Okay. Well, that is it. I really don't have anything else to say. Good luck in your drafts. And if you have any questions about any players at all, I will definitely respond to you if you tweet me at Matt Cummins. All right. So have a great weekend. And again, have a good time in your drafts. Okay. Goodbye. The conversation's ending in ways we can't undo. If you look back, you may not find me waiting for you. You see them burn with anger as we cut our shells in two, so my heart's consumed if you enter. The pain of doubt divides every feeling inside. How can a love, true love, decide just where the power lies? Those who get too far. Please come back soon. I am right here.